Bloody hell, Nick. How many screens have you got going? What are you trying to do here? What's going on?
Mate, my head is absolutely scrambled here. There are so many fights coming up this month that I'm trying to get my shit together, but all I ever end up doing is scrambling around, trying to find streams, trying to find this. I wouldn't mind. I've signed up for half these channels, but if I'm not in the right location at the right time, I can't access this and I can't access that. It's a fucking nightmare, and I'm sick of watching shitty streams the next day. I want my content live. It's doing me Sweden.
Hold your horses, Tonto. What you need is a NordVPN. And, as a little bit of a Brucey bonus for you, it's Cyber Month deal this month. Get yourself to nordvpn.com/fight or use the code FIGHT to get up to 73% off your NordVPN plan. Plus, you'll get a bonus gift. Be quick, because this offer is for a limited time only. Two-year plan price has dropped from $89 to $79, and the bonus gift is 1 month free. There you go, lad. Scrap all these screens. Just get yourself signed up to NordVPN.
This is Fight Disciples.
Welcome to podcast number 548. We are the Fight Disciples. This one is dedicated to the world of MMA, mainly UFC. Bits of other bits and bats do pop up from time to time, but it's mainly UFC. So if that is your bag, make sure you subscribe via iTunes. Fight Disciples is what you're looking for. And our website is fightdisciples.com. We do have loads of different Android feeds on there, like a Spotify, a Google Play, you name it. We've got it. All the links are on our website. Please subscribe to us on YouTube as well, because we're not just voices. We've got faces. Mainly for radio, but every now and again, people do like to look at us. So get on our YouTube channel, subscribe to us there, and we're all over social media too. Fight Disciples across the board, apart from Instagram, where we are the Fight Disciples. Mainly because I fucked up a couple of years ago doing some dodgy stuff, so therefore we had to set up another Instagram account. But it's all good now. It's all there for you to go and come and join us on a day-by-day, week-by-week basis. Regarding the fighting at the weekend, you can't always have it your own way, fight fans. You can't always have it all your own way. You've had 3 weeks of absolute blood and guts. That's what you've had. It was always going to happen. There was always going to be the calm after the storm. There was always going to be that. And that is why today's show is called Decisions, Decisions. Because at the weekend, it was one after the other. If you sat through the lot, fair fucking play to you. To be fair, it was on a decent time for British fight fans. So yeah. You probably did sit through it. You probably sat there with your beer or your takeaway on a Saturday night. You thought, go on, then I'll watch some fights. There's a bit of British interest in this as well. Go on, we'll have a little bit of a nosy. It just so happened that it was one of the British fighters is the only person that got finished on the card. A disappointing night if you wanted to see blood and guts and violent knockouts. It just wasn't to be. There's a couple of talking points that comes off it, but I doubt if you are listening to this show first and then thinking to yourself, I'll go back and watch some fights. I don't think we're going to be overly promoting anything. I don't think we're going to be overly promoting anything to you, to be fair. If you're a boxing fan that has come to us going, I might watch some MMA this week. What have the lads got to promote? Fuck all. No going on. And there's no fights coming up this week either, so there's nothing to look forward to. Thank you very much for listening. We'll catch you next time. See you later.
If you did record the UFC at the weekend and you're yet to dive into it, there is one fight worth watching, and it's Davy Grant's fight against Adrian Yanez, which kicked off the main card. That is literally the only fight I would recommend going and watching, because it was a cracker. It was fight of the night for a reason.
You didn't have any competition. What are you talking about?
Davy Grant did get busted up, but yeah, it was. I thought. Listen, we'll come on to it. We'll have to break the card.
Do you want a stat?
Down,
do you want a stat?
That
by
was
way?
Definitely the fight.
Do you want a stat on the whole card? Right, it's the first time in UFC history that they've had 11 fights or more on a card with one or less finish. First time ever that has happened. I think it works out at a 3%. Finish rate compared to, if you look at the Max Holloway card from last week, they had an 89% finish rate on that particular card. So maybe that's where I'm coming at it from. You know what I mean? The juxtaposition of those two cards are stark. They just slap you right in the face. Max Holloway's card, I think, is the highest percentage finish rate of the whole year so far. Then you've gone from the highest to the lowest within a matter of 7 days. So maybe we are being overly harsh.
Same venue, same octagon, same location. Well, and yeah. two completely... Imagine if you lived in Vegas and you managed to get tickets for Max Holloway, but, you know, something come up and you went, do you mind if I bump it and go the week after? Oh, you'd be devastated. You'd come out of there fucking wanting to do yourself in. You've had a nightmare there.
You've had a bad one. And you've got to wait 2 weeks before you get to see Rob Font and Jose Aldo. You know that the fight's there. You know that there's a tasty one waiting for you, but you've got an extra 7 days to hang on for it. Fuck me, come on. So decisions. I suppose we did all need a rest from the violence. Maybe that's the best way of looking at it. We'll go down from top to bottom because, let's be straight, as Nick just said, the highlight is the Davy Grant, Adrian Yanez fight. So we'll try and finish on that. We'll try and finish on a little bit of a pick-me-up.
Finish on a high.
Yes, exactly. Ketlin Vieira. Fucking hell, she's a big dude, isn't she? You know what I mean? She's a big... she is huge, mate. And it took her a little... I'll be honest, I think it took her about 5 minutes just to get over the fact that she was fighting Misha Tate. Because obviously, Misha's fucking superstar, man. And she's coming for us. She's like, you've seen all the press conferences that Misha's held since she's come back into the sport. I'm not here to fuck about. I want to try and get back to championship level. So I'm coming to fight. And you know that you're getting that with the cupcake. And I think it took Caitlin just about 5 minutes to go, right, stop thinking about fighting fucking Misha Tate and bust whoever it is up in front of me, bust her up.
Yeah.
And I thought from the second round onwards, she was great, man. She just did what she needed to do. She stood big, strong, tall, and just fucking smacked that jab out every 2 seconds. Bang. Couldn't miss, I think, from about... third or fourth round onwards, we a big right cross. And you can see on Misha's face at the end of the fight, man, she's fucked up. She absolutely... just the strength, the size, the power, the accuracy of what Ketlin Vieira was doing was top class. Is she the girl to topple the champ? Listen, there's not a lot of girls that are going to topple the champ in this division. Do I want to see the fight? Yeah, maybe, because I think that she's going to get to a stage where it becomes impossible not to put her in with Nunes. But... do I think, off the back of that performance, she's got enough to trouble Amanda Nunes? The answer to at this moment in time is no. But tick, 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 she did what she needed to do in the fight.
Yeah, she was quite frustrating to watch, actually, because I thought, for all Misha Tate's ambition, I thought the fight was only close. Commentary seemed like, oh, it's close, this could be three or two rounds either way. I didn't see that. I thought Misha Tate was setting a hot pace. Misha Tate made the fight happen because Ketlin Vieira didn't look like she wanted to engage for long portions of the fight. She was so committed to her counter-striking and so committed to just relying on her takedown defense. If Misha Tate wasn't there, it would have been an absolutely boring fight. So that was the one thing I took away. For me, Ketlin Vieira wins every round from two onwards.
Yeah.
And then I'm thinking... step it up. You're fighting Misha Tate. Make a statement. You know, you're going to let her steal the headlines. And even in the aftermath, you know, they interviewed Ketlin Vieira in a victory. And then they interviewed Misha Tate. And Misha Tate was the one that said everything that was interesting. And, you know, I'm back and it's great. I get to go home and see my kids and it's fine. And you take losses and move forward. And I'm buzzing about Misha Tate. Yeah, man, great attitude. I love it. What did Ketlin Vieira say again? And it's a bit like her performance. What did Ketlin Vieira do in this fight? Oh, yeah, she dominated because she punched with straight arms, with a strong count, with that strong right-hand counter every time. She couldn't miss with it. She had a really good jab and a takedown defense. She uses her size really well. Mm. She stands up nice and tall. She gets her hips nice and buried in against the cage. And whenever Misha Tate went in for a single leg, she would just rain down punches and elbows. But Misha Tate was the one that was setting the pace. And I think that's what wrapped the commentary team up in saying, oh, Misha Tate could have won this. Just because she's setting the pace doesn't mean... she was fucking swallowing punches every fight. Every round, she was just getting punched everywhere. So it wasn't even close, in my opinion. I think the judge that scored it, 49-46 in favour of Vieira, that's pretty much how close. I scored it.
Yeah.
But they were close rounds because it was where Misha moved forward and tried to get the fight going. That was when Vieira had success. At no point... did Vieira go forward? At no point did she go, right, I'm going to try and finish you now. And
she
that's going to cost her.
I think she could have done. I think she was just starstruck, mate. And that's
I think there's an element of, if I finish Misha Tate, if I do finish Misha Tate now, which I believe she could have done down the stretch, would the fact that I'm going to be fighting Amanda Nunes early in the new year be undeniable? And do I want that fight? am I ready for that fight? Mm. I think all that has gone through Caitlin Vieira's mind, where she's like, I'm not ready for Misha, for the champion yet. And the problem is, you stopped the former champion. Guess what, kid? Whether you want it or not, you're getting the next shot. And I think Vieira's a bit like, she looked a bit tentative at times, even though she was winning rounds comfortably, not getting hurt. She looked tentative to put her foot down. She looked tentative to go in there and look for the kill. You only do that when you want to make a statement, when you want the next title fight, when you believe you're ready for it. Mm. That's when you go forward and go, right, what's this then? Fuck off. I'm ready. Let's go. The fact she didn't do that makes me think that she doesn't want to fight Amanda Nunes anytime soon. And maybe that's it. Maybe that's wise. Maybe that's wise.
Yeah, maybe you're right, mate. Maybe you're right. It's a shame, innit? Because of everything that came before it, you're kind of at that stage where you're going, come on, give me some of it. And then it just plods a lot. It plodded along a bit. She didn't put her foot down, you're right.
I'll tell you what, I was impressed with someone that did make a statement, someone that did go, give me a fucking top five fight. And that was Sean Brady in the co-main event.
Oh, you see. Right, go on then. I'm interested to see what you said.
Go on. I thought he mauled Michael Chiesa. I thought he was fucking excellent. Chiesa, surprisingly, was winning the boxing match. But when it went to Michael Chiesa's world, which is the canvas, Sean Brady just absolutely dominated from back. Listen, I thought, again, Chiesa's winning the striking battle, busting him up. But Brady was able to get those takedowns, get back control, get in that body triangle, get in that lock. You know, get his locks in, chase the neck. You know, he was pursuing a submission. Chiesa, very good on the ground, was able to get out of it. But there was many occasions there where Brady looked like he was going to finish the fight. And yes, he looked gassed at the end. Yes, he was, all that muscle mass caught up with him. But I thought he absolutely made a statement. And I thought it was a good, and in many ways, unanimous decision. Completely agree with that. He won two of the three rounds quite easily.
Yeah.
I thought he made a statement, man, against the guy that is the bogeyman in the welterweight division. Now he's the bogeyman. Guess what? Sean Brady's the bogeyman now.
I agree with that. The listen, what was he ranked? 14, taking on 6 in this division. To do what he did against an elite-level grappler in Michael Chiesa. And I found it really interesting at the end because I didn't know that he'd never wrestled at college level. Sean Brady. He said, no, I've never wrestled. I just rock up and this is what I do. He's an elite level grappler. He's undefeated for a reason. I can fully understand, though. And again, I've got to try my best to take away what I'd seen previous going into this fight, because I'm watching decision after decision after decision. I'm just thinking, fucking hell, it's going again. And therefore, that then reflects on the performance that Sean Brady's putting in, which I think is unfair. He was elite. Yeah. Absolutely sensational, and it was a top-class performance against the top-class fighter in Michael Chiesa. I can totally understand, though, if people are coming at me going, it's not attractive to watch, though, is it? It's not majorly attractive to watch. No, it's not. It's not at all. It's not one of them where you're going, fucking hell, I need to go and watch Sean Brady fight. But there's not a lot of people that are going to stick their hand up and say, go on then, I'll have a go with him. Because he's fucking, he's got that horribleness about him, man. You know what I mean? Once he gets his hands on you, you can't fucking shake him. He gets them locks in quick. He's very, very good at getting hooks and then body triangles on, and so therefore you can't move. Chiesa is elite, and I think that's the message that we should throw out. Chiesa's an elite grappler, an elite wrestler, and he fucking ragdolled him, mate. He absolutely ragged. Once it hit the mat, there was only one dude in control of that whole fight. It's going to be interesting to see what they pair him with.
Well, we talk about Michael Chiesa all the time. We've spoke about him on, not only on this show,
and he's quite dull. He's quite dull to watch, isn't he?
He is. He's dull. He's the guy nobody wants to fight because he's a fucking nightmare. Because you know he's going to drag you to the mat and he's going to do what Sean Brady did. That's what Michael Chiesa does. That's how Michael Chiesa wins fights. Yeah. That's why Michael Chiesa had to work his balls off to get into a top six position.
Mate, that's why he's fighting number 14s. Fight, that's why he's fighting number 14s, because they'll be fighting.
Fuck that. I'm not fighting him. He's a fucking nightmare. You can't get him off you. And it was just mad that Michael Chiesa's style come back and bit him on the ass. Michael Chiesa was the better boxer. Michael Chiesa was the one that needed to keep it standing, that needed to be the boxer. And his own ground game let him down. The one thing that he's most famous for, being a fucking nightmare on the ground, let him down against a guy that's not even... That must be hard to take, man. When you're a full, you know, ex-all-star collegiate wrestler. You come into UFC. You can fucking grapple the shit out of people. You're a nightmare. Everybody hates you because you're not necessarily the viral moment fighter, but you can, on your day, you can absolutely ragdoll and beat anybody. And suddenly someone comes in with no wrestling experience of any real note and does to you what you've been doing to top contenders for the last 2 or 3 years.
Yeah.
Must be so disheartening for someone like Michael Chiesa. But that's exactly what Sean Brady did, man. Just got in there and fucked them up. And listen, I was just about to say, there's nobody in the welterweight division that will want to take on Sean Brady. Obviously, Khamzat came out and went, give me that guy, because that's what Khamzat does. Khamzat will fight any fucker, as he proved on a grappling mat himself at the weekend, which I'm sure we'll come on to. Khamzat's a fucking lunatic. But Sean Brady, he arrived. I know it wasn't sexy. I know it wasn't necessarily enjoyable. But you need to appreciate what he just did to the grappler. He absolutely fucked him up on the ground in his own world. He took him into deep water where the shark lives and he choked him the fuck out. Well, he almost did.
The easiest bonus of the night went to Talia Santos because it was the only the only finish of the night, but you've got to be super impressed by it because she's taking on Jojo Wood now, who is an elite Muay Thai fighter, and she absolutely lit her up on the feet, man. Lit her up good. I think she was beating her to the punch, beating her to the kicks, landed heavy, and took Jojo out, man. You can't argue with the performance. I know that we're probably waxing lyrical even more so than we should do because of what else was on the card, but a great performance from Talia Santos.
She was excellent, absolutely excellent. And, you know, JoJo's a top contender for the reason. She worked hard to get into that position. And, okay, you know, submissions is never a strong point, but you were right. She was losing the striking battle as well. I thought Santos just looked bigger, stronger, sharper.
Quicker, yeah.
Mate, just everything about her. She's the real deal, eh? You know, and I know she's got one loss on her record back to her UFC debut, but tell you what, with time now, that loss for, I think it was Barella. Barella will take that to the bank now because that loss looks fucking sensational after the run that Santos is currently on. I think that's 4 straight wins, but 4 wins against steadily increased better opposition as well. You know, she's been getting matched up every time. None of those 4 have been gimmies. Like, okay, you beat this girl. Okay, well, this girl's a bit higher. Oh, beat her. Okay, this girl's fringe ranking. Okay, you beat her. Okay, now we'll give you someone ranked then. Okay, you beat her. You know what I mean? So
yeah.
She's moving through the weight division in the right kind of manner. And I think, to be honest with you, I think she's 1 win away from a title shot.
Fight of the night went to David Grant versus Adrian Yanez. And I suppose this is where we will finish because this is the only fight that I would recommend that you go and have a little bit of a watch. And there's lots of talking points that come out of it. Obviously, the toughness of David Grant and the development that he is now showing, obviously, as a fighter on the feet. Adrian Yanez, we told you last week, is the real deal. Obviously, he was going through some serious trauma with the sad passing of his coach and all that emotion poured out at the end of the fight. So he had to obviously deal with that. He's taken on the responsibilities of that gym since his coach has taken on. So obviously, the weight of the world was on his shoulders. My first talking point, Nicholas.
Scoring.
Because I don't know how you've scored it. You don't know how I've scored it. All right? How the fuck a judge has given all 3 rounds to David Grant in this fight is absolutely beyond me. I'm English. I wanted David to win the fight. I'm impressed by what David was doing. Every round was super competitive. Of course it was. David was in it. But there's absolutely nowhere whatsoever, mate, that he gets a 30-27 in that fight.
No. No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. I agree with the other 2 judges, to be honest with you. I scored 29-28 in favour of Yanez. I thought Davey absolutely had a good round in there. And all around, so competitive. You know, it was a real good fight. But there's no way in the world Davey Grant won all 3 rounds. And there's never a bigger, you know, signpost for that than to just look at the faces at the end of the fight. Davey Grant's face was absolutely busted up. And Yanez looked as good looking as when he started the fight. So
apart from his ear, mate. Fuck me, that was a big old unit, wasn't it?
So you know that if nothing else, that just shows you where the power strikes were landing. And this is a violent business. This is not boxing where there's different ways of scoring fights. You know, the first and foremost, it's You know, it's landing the big telling shots, isn't it? It's
damage.
Landing
that's
the big
what you're looking
power
for.
Moves. It's damage. That's the word. That's the word I was looking for. Damage. It's about damage. And Davy Grant's face was damaged by Adrian Yanez.
Yeah.
So it's very surprising. A 30-27 in favour of Yanez, I think, is harsh on Davy Grant.
Yeah.
But
it's
not
believable.
Out of the equation.
Yeah.
But a 30-27 in favour of Davy Grant, Jesus Christ.
Just didn't happen.
That judge must have been a Geordie.
Like you said, damage is the thing that you're looking for first and foremost. Now, I can totally appreciate at the end of the fight, you just have 15 minutes. All the damage, for example, could have just taken place in a five-minute period. That doesn't necessarily tell the whole story of the fight. I get that, and there'll be people obviously screaming that at the podcast. But if you watch the fight from start to finish, the first round is very close. They both come out, they're both landing, they're both kicking away, they're both landing clean on each other. And Davy, I personally think, Davy is winning the first round up until about a minute 30 remaining. And then once you see, Yanez lands a massive left hand, rocks Davy back a touch, and he follows it up with a solid combination which pushes Davy back onto the fence, and then Davy's kind of chasing the rest of the round. That, for me, therefore, then, you weigh up everything that you've seen over that five-minute period, who inflicted the most damage, who was doing the more significant work. Obviously, it didn't take place on the floor, so you were obviously referring to strikes. Adrian Yanez takes the first round. Well done him. Mm-hmm. Second round is equally as close, mate. Equally as close. But again, you've got to look at damage and significant strikes. Who's landing the more telling shots? And I just think very closely, Davy nicks it. I really do. People might come at me and say you're talking bollocks, but I just think he nicks it with the more telling strikes in that particular round. Third round's also tight. Listen, Davy's never out of the fight. He's never getting a good hide in. But in the third round, around about 2.5 minutes into the round, Yanez then just starts landing clean. Really, really clean. And obviously, I think Davy had a nick on his nose, I think, from the first or the second round. And he just fucking splatters it all over his face. And he's the reason it looks like that at the end of that round is because Yanez is landing so clean on him. And I think it's quite an easy round to score, that third round, in favour of Yanez. So I've no idea how a judge has just gone, yeah, go on then, we'll give that one Davy Grant as well. Nah, mate. I know it's a split decision. It just didn't. It should have been a unanimous decision. Yanez gets the victory, and obviously he moves on. I thought he was very, very efficient with his work. He doesn't throw shitloads, and maybe this is where people are getting confused with it, because we've spoken about this in boxing a lot, haven't we? Davy's just a buzzsaw, man. He's fucking chucking. He's doing all sorts. He's chasing you down. He's spinning all over the gaff. So there's energy. There's constant energy there, and that maybe can distract from what's actually landing. If you then just take a step back, look at what's landing. Yanez doesn't throw shitloads. He's very efficient with his stuff. Pop, bang, bang. Okay, he misses every now and again, but he throws to land, and 9 times out of 10, he does land. I think his percentage land rate is very, very high compared to other guys in this particular weight division. Very efficient guy. I think now it's time to go to the proper party, because we're high on him. We've been high on him for a couple of years now. It's time to go to the proper party. I also think there's another fighter in this division that needs to go to the proper party. That guy is Sean O'Malley. Sean O'Malley, Adrian Yanez. Let's go, baby. I'm in.
Yeah, I think that was Yanez's 8th straight win. Obviously, he's undefeated in the UFC as well. That was his 4th consecutive performance bonuses, 3 knockout performance bonuses in the run-up to this, then a Fight of the Night performance with Davy Grant. What more do you want from the kid? You know, that's form that demands a ranking. That's form that demands a ranking opponent next. And I think he will get a ranking opponent next. I think he's 27 years of age. He ticks every box with the UFC in terms of, you know, he looks good. He talks good. He's young. He's someone they can invest
He looks like early Masvidal, doesn't he?
He
looks like backstreet Masvidal.
And listen, every single fight he's had so far has been in Las Vegas as well. So they obviously like him. They obviously like having him around. He's been nice and busy. That was his 3rd fight this year. He's ticking all the boxes. And it wouldn't surprise me if he got somebody in the top 10 next, whether it's O'Malley or somebody else. Wouldn't surprise me if he got somebody like that next, because this kid has got the potential to go on and do great things. You know, he's only got 3 losses on his record, but they're pretty early in his career as well. I think he lost his 2nd fight, and, you know, he lost 2 of his first 10 or whatever it might be. But he's one of those, he's a fighter that the UFC are looking for. You know, we talk about it all the time, the model of this business. It's a damn business.
His hands are so good, man. His hands are so good. And that's the attractive thing that sells, mate. People love to see knockouts and the guy's got it.
But he's a jiu-jitsu black belt as well. His background is jiu-jitsu. So he's got that to fall back on. So he ticks all the boxes in being a really exciting prospect. And the UFC is a diamond business, as I say. They're in the business of finding kids who can headline pay-per-views. And he's some way away from that. I appreciate that. But he's got the talent that, if nurtured the right way, given the right opportunity, the right fights at the right time, which the UFC, as we know, are masters are, this guy's got a story, man, and this guy could really sell. So, yeah, I think he's going to have a ranked opponent early in 2022, and hold on to your hats, you know, because Adrian Yanez could become a title contender but in 12 months' time.
Now then, right, that kind of concludes all the weekend's action-ish. 25 minutes into the podcast, near enough, mate. I'm looking at what we can promote for next week. Nothing. There's no card on, right? There is a little bit of news regarding fights that are being made and guys that have been signed. We'll talk about it in a minute. But we're going to go to Sweden and we're going to step away from the octagon and mixed martial arts and just concentrate purely on wrestling. No, not Hacksaw Jim Duggan and Jake the Snake Roberts. We're talking about elite level grappling. Bulldog Fight Night 9. Yes, I know that you were all tuning in on Friday evening for this because Jack O'Manson, who is a middleweight in the UFC, an elite level grappler, was participating in an elite-level grappling contest with none other than everybody's favourite Chechen slash Swede right now, the one and only Wolf Boas himself, Khamzat Chimaev, who, by the way, struggled to make weight. And I'm not saying struggled to make weight in the fact that he needed to get under, he needed to get up. So therefore, he weighed in with full Timberland boots and jeans on Friday in order to make sure that everybody was happy with the weight that he carried. Did that affect him whatsoever when it came to the grappling contest? Now, I don't know about you, Nick. I'm not all fair with the scoring of these elite-level wrestling competitions. Maybe I should pay a little bit more attention and done a little bit of due diligence on the scoring prowess. But I know that from watching a lot of mixed martial arts, that Jack O'Manson knows what he's doing when it comes to grappling. So I would believe that he could hold his own with a guy of a lesser weight category who was only just really burst onto the scene. He got beat 9-0. He got beat 9-0 in a wrestling competition against Khamzat Chimaev. And for anybody that has seen the videos of this, and some of which we've posted on our social media, at one point in the fight, Jack O'Manson had double underhooks on him. Yes, double underhooks in the centre of the octagon. You think to yourself, here we go, Jack. All you've got to do is throw a little trip in there. Bish, bash, bosh. You've got control of the fight. Hamzat's not having any of that. You can have as many underhooks as you fucking want, sunshine. He'll lift you from a reverse kind of position and end up in top. There you go. Khamzat Chimaev. If you weren't on the train yet, you need to fucking get on the train right now, because this guy is defying all logic when it comes to anything in fight sports.
Yeah, man, it's absolutely crazy, and that whole event in Gothenburg, I think it was in Gothenburg in Sweden, was absolutely bonkers as well.
Mate, when the fight kicked off, there was people still in
as well, you know.
Yeah, there was people still in the octagon when the fight kicked off. They hadn't cleared the octagon; they just kicked off. We're like, what is going on? It's like some backstreet Masvidal brawl. What is happening?
Yeah,
mega
just fucking chaos. Anthony Yidgit was on the undercard as well. He was like the co-main event in a professional boxing match. You know, and he fought fucking Baranchik last year or whatever it was. So it was just a complete and utter Swedish carnage. Fight night shit show, just bonkers. But the main man, of course, was the poster boy, because that's what he is. He is the poster boy of fight sports, certainly out of Sweden at the moment. They know they've got a superstar on their hands. And they just brought in one of the best middleweights in the world, who is a grappler, who is a submission specialist, to take on this welterweight prospect and Khamzat. Evil Habib, as he has now been dubbed, just fucking mauls him everywhere. Absolutely insane. And it just, once again, you know, you think you can't get any higher on Khamzat. You think you're like, you're already at fever pitch. And then they just do shit like this, and it just may get you even more excited, because we talk about the fact, can he do it to someone who, it's all good and well doing it to John Phillips, so it's all good and well, you know, catching Meerschaert square on and punching him out his lights out, but can he do it against the top guys? Listen, I know this was a grappling fight. It wasn't mixed martial arts, but Jack Hermanson.
To nil.
Strength is grappling.
To nil.
And
he beat him to nil.
Absolutely mauled him. So it's insane, man. And once again, it just feeds into that. It throws more petrol on the fire of saying Khamzat needs the next title shot. I want to see Khamzat versus Kamaru Usman.
You're a bad man.
I
want
to see it now.
You're a bad man. You're such a bad man. Bad man. The amount of people, this is the thing that has been constant with us over the last couple of weeks or even couple of months. The amount of people that are coming at us going, you two are a disgrace. British journalists should be getting behind your British guy. No, man. First and foremost, take nationality out of this. We're guys that love this sport. What's the best thing for the sport? What is the best thing for the sport? And as we said on many a rant recently, Leon Edwards deserves a title shot. There's no doubt about that. Mm-hmm. He deserves his title shot. But as we keep telling you, if you're not listening, just turn it up now so this message comes straight through your speakers and into your ears. Sporting merit doesn't always get rewarded in the UFC, because what the UFC specialise in is giving you what you want 9 times out of 10. That's what they do. Mm-hmm. They deliver 90% of the time for the fans' demand. And if you're telling me the fans right now are demanding, there's only us talking about sporting merit and people within the game mm-hmm. that are talking about the sporting merit of Leon Edwards. The fans out there in the big wide world, if you go into the casinos of Las Vegas, mate, here's a story for you, right? I'll nail this down for you, right? I was in London all weekend working. And I got a taxi from London Euston down to the radio studios that I was working at on Friday night. Gets in the Uber. The geezer's driving away, and he goes, "Where have you come down from, mate?" Manchester. Chatting away, he goes, "Oh right." And he looked at obviously the destination of where I was going. He goes, "What do you do here?" So I said, "Oh, I do the broadcasting. I cover all the fight sports." He goes, "Oh, fight sports? Yeah, yeah." He goes, "What light like?" So I said, "Boxing, obviously first and foremost." And he goes, "I'm not really into." Boxing. I said, "I'm not really into fight sports, if I'm honest, but my son, who was, I think he said he was 20, my son is massive into the UFC. Now, bear in mind, this is a guy who's like 40 odd years of age, just driving, and as passive conversation with his son, has spoken to him on certain occasions about the UFC. So we're chatting away about UFC, and I said, "Yeah, I cover UFC as well." Bum, 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 bum. Chatting away. And he goes, it went quiet in the car, and he went, "Have you heard about that guy with the dodgy lip?" And I went, "Have I heard about the guy with the dodgy lip?" "Yes, I've heard about the guy with the dodgy lip." He goes, What's his name? My son. He never shuts up about him. And I said, "Khamzat Chimaev." He goes, "Fucking Chimaev." Honestly, the rest of the conversation was just all about, he goes, "He's a bad motherfucker, man. He's like this, 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 and this." I said, "My son's been showing me some videos of this guy and talking to me about this guy, boom, 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 boom." I said, "You know that he's only been in the UFC for like 18 months, man. He's only just burst onto the scene, and he's been out for near enough a year with COVID and all this." He goes, "Yeah, I know the story. Never once did he refer to Leon Edwards. He didn't even talk about the champ, mate. Didn't even talk about Kamaru Usman. No. Didn't even talk about anybody else in this division. The guy was just like, oh." And even when I referred to other fighters, they go, "No, I've not heard about him. I'll speak to my son about him and see what my son says about this guy." This is a taxi driver with no real interest. His only connection is trying to have a conversation with his boy, and they are talking about Khamzat Chimaev. So don't come at me saying, "You guys need to bang the drum for Leon Edwards." No, Leon Edwards needs to bang the drum for himself. That's what he needs to do. Khamzat Chimaev's banging the drum for himself. And that is why we recognize as a podcast that is specializing in getting you, the fan, closer to this action. We fully understand what it is, what is the bigger message. And the bigger message is that Khamzat Chimaev's train's fucking rolling. And if you're trying to stop it, you're a lunatic, because it's coming. And at some point next year, this dude's going to be fighting for the championship.
And then, listen, as you say, it's all about spectacle. It's all about what puts the most bums on seats, what brings the most eyeballs to the sport. Leon Edwards taking on Kamaru Usman next, and we're led to believe that his conversation's going on right now. Leon is more than likely going to get the next shot at Kamaru Usman.
And we're all in. We're all
brilliant.
In.
Great. Thank Christ for that. Superb. Does Leon win? That's another conversation, maybe for another day on a different podcast. put it this way, he will start as a substantial underdog with the American betting and probably the British bookies as well. That's mm-hmm. just a fact. Mm-hmm. Now, let's look at the welterweight division, shall we? Are you more excited as a non-Brit? Try and pretend now you're just a man who walks this air, part of the meta universe. You're not part of the British Isles. You're a fan of the UFC. What are you more excited about? Leon Edwards versus Kamaru Usman Part 2 or Colby Covington versus Masvidal in the tough finale after 8 weeks of tough TV? It's not even a conversation. That 100% does better on pay-per-view. That's a bigger fight for the pay-per-view market globally and in America alone. Here's another fight. Khamzat Chimaev versus Gilbert Burns. That's a fucking much bigger fight because Khamzat Chimaev is a bigger star than Kamaru Usman. Never mind Leon Edwards. Khamzat Chimaev is a bigger global star than Kamaru Usman, the UFC welterweight champion. Fight. So fight. Whoever he fights gets more interest than a championship fight.
Just before you carry on, just to back up what you've just said there with people listening who are probably shaking their head. Trust me, whenever we put out anything connected to Khamzat Chimaev on our YouTube, podcast, picture, whatever, it goes through the fucking roof. Through the roof. He is pulling numbers for fun, this dude. Apologies for interrupting you. Carry on.
Yep. So that's the issue that the UFC have got now, is that they've got the three biggest fights to make in the welterweight division. The third most important, the third one that's going to make the most amount of money, generate the most amount of interest, is the champion defending his belt against the number one contender. That's a problem. That's a problem for the UFC, and it's certainly a problem for Kamaru Usman, who'd be like, wait a minute, I'm making what? The forecast for the pay-per-view is what? Well, Colby and Masvidal are making more than that. Khamzat Chimaev's making more than that, beating a guy I've already beaten before, my former teammate. What the fuck is going on? So to be the star, to continue to be the number one guy, to get some of that traction, Kamaru Usman is at some stage going to go, why the fuck am I fighting Leon Edwards again? Why aren't I fighting Khamzat Chimaev? He's the biggest star. I should fight that guy. And if I'm the UFC, and the UFC are a money-making business, and they're a superstar-making business, I've got to agree with him. I've got to go, well, you're right, yeah. He is the biggest star in this world. He's a bigger star than you. So that fight does make more sense than anything else. And Khamzat takes that shit as well. So it's a weird place that we're in right now. The only saving grace may be that people who work with Khamzat, Andreas Michael and the team are all-stars. Maybe they are having a different conversation where they go, right, let Kamaru Usman do the Leon Edwards thing. Get that shit out the way. Give us a Gilbert Burns. Give us one last statement to make before we go in with Kamaru Usman. Maybe they are pumping the brakes slightly behind the scenes. I find that hard to believe. If Kamaru finds out, you're fucked, because he'll probably maul the fucking life out of you. Because Kamaru is here for... Khamzat is here for one reason. Khamzat Chimaev is here to fucking set the world on fire. He's like the Joker in that Batman movie, man. Some men just want to see the world burn. That's Khamzat Chimaev. He wants to see the world burn. He doesn't give a fuck about the belts. He doesn't give a fuck about the weight divisions. He doesn't care about the rankings. He wants to see the world burn. And he will run through anybody the UFC put in front of him to make that happen. That's why he's a superstar. That's why every fight fan on the planet is fully on board the Khamzat Chimaev hype train. We want to see this guy set the world on fire because chaos rules. And he's the king of chaos, isn't he?
That's two promos you've cut today, man. You cut one on the boxing show and you've just cut one on the UFC show. The commissioner is back making fights, baby. This is what the fans want to hear. Mate, you're 100. Speaking of grappling contests, your boy John Jones is having a go, mate. December the 9th. He's taking on a dude called Jack Swagger, who I believe is from the world of WWE, in a bit of a grappling contest. John Jones, obviously, is now going to go and flex his heavyweight muscles. He's going to show us what it's all about.
Yeah, and listen, he's no longer my guy. I just want to make that clear.
Oh, just because you've cut a promo for Khamzat, look at you now.
Yeah, well, yeah, Hamzat's my guy now. After John Jones's last performance in Las Vegas, he is no longer my guy, and he Correct. Will never be my guy again. I've seen he was posting about being 60 days sober and, you know, he's looking forward to this grappling match. What do you want, man? A fucking Blue Peter badge? Good. You're being a professional at last. It's only taken 10 years for you to grow the fuck up. If you're 60 days sober, cool, man. Come back to me when you're 6 years sober, you clown. So yeah, he goes into that grappling match. I couldn't give two fucks, to be totally honest with you. I want John Jones to have his day in court, and then we'll move forward potentially next year. But he's no longer my favourite guy. He's no longer my guy. He is just another guy. Will we see him fight a heavyweight again in the UFC? I used to be counting down the days, and now I couldn't give two flying fucks if he never fights again. That's just me, baby.
No. I don't think it's just you. I think there's a lot of fight fans that maybe are having that internal conversation with themselves. You know, I think it's a really valid point that you've brought up, that we've got to. Okay, we try our best on this show to only talk about the shit that happens inside the octagon and happens within the UFC. There's plenty of fighters that have done things outside of which we have, I won't say reneged on commenting on, but we've kind of just gone, okay, that's that, and we don't agree with X, Y, and Z. We're just going to view them on their sporting prowess and what happens within the octagon. But there comes a time, doesn't there? There comes a time where there's certain things that hit your moral code, of which you've got to genuinely have a proper conversation about and going, well, hang on a minute, mate. I can't now just fucking have a black and white line. These lines are now getting blurred, and what you've done out there is now going to affect the way that I view you in here, because I'm fucking so far against what you've done out of here. I can't come and back what you're doing here. I don't think you're on your own with that conversation, mate. I know that you was once upon a time a huge John Jones fan, so it must have been quite a difficult thing for you to be able to say when someone that you've had on that pedestal does something so abhorrent that you're against as now landed you in this particular situation. I'm sure there's plenty of fans that are listening to this that are having that same conversation.
Yeah, it's like that kid at the weekend who come out on the undercard, who come out with a snidey comment. He beat the Chinese lad and he come out with some snidey racist comment in the post-fight interview, and DC had to shut it down and stuff. You just think, well, fuck you, Cody Dearden. I've got no interest in your career moving forward now. You've just shown your true colours, so you're done for me. And there comes a time where you've got to draw the line. Listen, I've been a John Jones fanboy since day one of him coming into the UFC, when he was crown champion, when he stepped in for Rashad and stepped out of Rashad's shadow. And I've done nothing but support John Jones during this journey that he's been on. And it has been turbulent, and it's been far more Mike Tyson than he would like us to believe. You know, he has been a complete fuck up outside of the octagon. And I've always kind of laughed it off a little bit and gone, well, yeah, you know, he's this beast inside the octagon. And sometimes when you let the beast out in the wild public, they're going to run him wild and run amok. But there's, as you say, there's certain times when your own personal moral code gets crossed. Yeah. And what happened in Las Vegas, for me, finished him for me in terms of me ever being a fanboy again. And, you know, my desire to see John Jones compete inside the octagon, and something that I was so high on 6 months ago even, is completely been demoralized now. And, you know, I've got no desire. If it happens in the future, listen, I'll judge it then. I'll talk about it then. But right here, right now, he's kind of dead to me. I'll be totally honest with you.
Let's get on to something a little bit more positive. For British fighters in particular, we've got a great fight, which, again, we still can't come to you and confirm that UFC London is March 19th, but work towards it. Work towards it, people. We're kind of going in that direction, and fingers crossed we'll have an announcement for you soon. And we've got a great fight for you. Habib's going to be in town, because Umar Nurmagomedov is taking on our very own Jack Shore. Woo! Jackie boy's got himself a fucking name, baby. Time to turn up and fuck this party right up, Jack. That's what it's all about, man. Don't get better when it comes to British grappling than Jack Shore, yeah? Don't get better than Dagestani grappling when it comes to a Nurmagomedov. The party's on, baby.
It's a wonderful fight, you know, and it's the type of fight that
great
Jack
matchmaking.
Looking for.
Great,
mate, it's superb. It's superb.
For both of them.
You know, and as you say, it's been earmarked for March the 19th in London. A couple of fighters have got dates lined up there now. I think Molly McCann's got it signed a new deal with the UFC. She's going to be on that card. Tom Aspinall, I'm pretty sure, is going to be on that card as well. It's quite a few. But right now, this is the big fight. This is the fight that you've made, and everyone's going, holy shit. Because Jack Shore could become the guy that ends Habib's run as a coach.
Yeah.
that's on the table right now. And for what, you know, people might go, well, that's not worth fuck all. It's worth something in this sport. When people keep writing about the narrative of Khabib being unbeaten as a coach, just like he was unbeaten as a fighter, to get the opportunity to be the first guy to end that is huge. And Jack Shaw's an undefeated fighter, so why shouldn't he believe that he can beat Umar? Absolutely,
I think
he will.
I think he can beat him.
Not only can he, I think he will beat him. Ooh. I think he will beat him. I think Jack is sharp enough on the feet. Sharpening up on the feet, I think he'll have the size advantage as well. He's sharp, and I've been lucky enough to spend a lot of time with Jack as well over the last couple of months, because we've been doing, when we were in during lockdown, we did a couple of five live commentary gigs together up in Salford. So I've been lucky enough to spend some time with him in the studio, chatting with him off air and everything else. And he's zoned in, man. He's fucking absolutely laser focused. Him and his dad have built something. Reminds me very, very similar to Tom Aspinall and his dad as well. You know, they knew where they were going from a very young age. He knew the experiences he needed to have, the type of training that he needs to do to get him to where he is. You know, his nutrition, his strength and conditioning is all on point now as well. You know, he's had a real exciting time in his career. It's certainly going to be a main card fight. It's going to get a lot of eyeballs all over the world. Jack will know that. This is the moment. This is what he's been working his whole life for. This is the breakthrough moment where whoever comes out of this gets a good ranking in this weight division. So I'm absolutely buzzing for him. Absolutely buzzing. And I tell you what, mate, it's going to, this card's going to have to be matched pretty good to knock that down the pecking order, because right now that's right up there, man. That's a serious fight.
Yeah, it's a main card fight, definitely. And another young man that surely is making his UFC debut at London in March will be a kid that we've spoken about on several occasions.
This is exciting.
Absolutely tearing up the amateur scene. Multiple time world champion for all different age groups. Out of Dagestan, comes to the UK as a refugee, seeks asylum, now becomes a full-on British citizen. Congratulations to him on those successes outside of the octagon, and we are looking forward now to documenting what goes on inside the octagon for Mohammed Mokaev. Lovely kid. First time I ever met this lad, right? He must have been about 15, 16 years of age, working out of the gym in Manchester, because I went up to go and see Brendan, and he's really close with Brendan Lochnane. So I've gone in there, and even before me and Brendan started chatting, he went, "See this kid here?" And he pointed at him, and honestly, he was a school kid. He was fucking he was 16 years of age or whatever he was. He pointed at him, he goes, "This kid's going to be the fucking UFC champion." And I went, "Get to fuck, man. How can you predict that now at 16 years of age?" I'm fucking telling you, mate, he's unbelievable. And obviously at that stage, he'd already gone through certain age groups and become champion at his age groups IMAF. And all this type of thing. We IMAF, mate. And obviously now, since he turned pro, we've been banging the drum. He's been fighting with Brave and all this type of stuff. We've been banging the drum. He's here now. The party's here. The youngest guy currently signed to the UFC, and he's fucking British, and he's coming for everybody in March. Congratulations, Mo. Delighted for you, mate. This is going to be big.
It's going to be huge, you know, and I can't express how exciting this kid is as a prospect. You know, the mad thing is, he got the UFC deal 24 hours after his UK citizenship come through as well, which was something that we talked about on the show when he was still as an amateur. He was representing the UK, undefeated amateur, competing in IMAF, the International Mixed Martial Arts Federation, first as a junior, becomes world champion, then as a senior, becomes world champion. I think it was two-time junior IMAF champion, one-time senior IMAF champion. Got everything. Absolutely everything, ticks every box. Now he's been taken under the wing of one of the royal family of Bahrain, the guy that's massively into MMA, owns Brave FC, signs with them, goes undefeated in Brave. But Mo's here for one reason, man. You know, anytime you spoke with the kid during his rise, he always had eyes for UFC. It was always going to be the UFC, of course it is. And the exciting thing about Mo is that, yes, he's got that Dagestani history and that base and that automatic tie now with the Middle East, which is so important for the UFC's continued growth in the Middle East. Because let's face it, they conquered Abu Dhabi Fight Island because of one reason alone. They had the poster boy in Khabib to fucking make it huge in that region. It was popular, but to make it huge, that Dagestani, that Muslim influence resonated so much with the fans there who were obsessed with jiu-jitsu anyway, that it just exploded. And, you know, think about the Middle East. We're late to the party in terms of the Middle East being a tourist destination. The Russians have been going there for fucking years. You know, every time you go to Dubai or Abu Dhabi, anyone that's been will know, there's fucking rich Russian men with young fucking wives pretty much sitting around every single pool or every beach that you go to. It's their playground. So that connection is always there. Now, the interesting thing about Mo is, yes, he's incredibly talented. Yes, he's fucking 100% the future, and he will fight for the title. I'm adamant about it. But he ticks all these boxes. He sells in the Middle East because of his Dagestan, his Russian roots. He sells, obviously, in Eastern Europe around Russia. He sells in the UK because this is his new home. This is where he's based. He trains out of Manchester. He also trains out of Liverpool. He also trains out of Dagestan. He also trains out of the Middle East. This is a kid that has not left any stone unturned. This is not like the UFC have come along and suddenly they're going to make his dreams come true. He has made this happen. Whenever you spoke to Mo, he's like, oh yeah, I'm just going over to Bahrain to train with like the national jiu-jitsu team over there. And then after that, I'm going back to Dagestan. I'm going to roll with these fucking Russian killers and blah, this. And then I've got this week over here where I'm going to compete in Sambo. And then I'm back to the UK to spar with Brendan and the SBG team. Oh, and then Danny Roberts is back in Liverpool. So I'm going to be over there with Danny Roberts and the team at Aspire. You're just like, fuck me, kid. The amount of experience that he's got and that IMAF run of being a three-time, multiple-time IMAF world champion, junior and senior level.
Fuck me.
Don't turn your nose up at that. There's a lot of experience went into that, and he's undefeated. Undefeated as an amateur, now undefeated as a pro. Got it all. Absolutely got it all. And I tell you what, there'll be noise, a lot of noise around him fight week in London. There'll be a lot of noise around him because he's a guy that, you domestic MMA fans that are, that go out the weekend. There was a show in Liverpool at the weekend. Domestic level, up and coming fighters coming through. There's a hardcore, let's call them a hardcore MMA fan base that go to these low level shows. Every single person in the UK that's hardcore MMA that knows about Mo Makhachev, they know about him. He's the worst kept secret in UK MMA. Everyone knew one day he's going to get there, and when he gets there, I want to be there. People will want to be there on March the 19th, if indeed that is the night he makes his debut, to say, I was there the night Mo Makhachev made his UFC debut, because people know where the end game is. He's 100% legit, and he's 100% incredibly talented. There's only one way it's going.
He's in Bahrain at the moment. I'm going to text him, mate. We're going to get him on the show. Fucking get him on this week. Let's get the boy on.
Right.
Congratulations to Mo. With his UFC deal, and fingers crossed we do get to see him in March. There's no fights this week, man. There's no fights. We've got a week off. You've got an extra week to wait for Rob Font against Jose Aldo, which is a ridiculous fight. That's definitely going to deliver. So I think you need a little bit of time off. Enjoy yourselves this week. Take the wife out. Take your boyfriends out. All that type of carry on. You know what I mean? Treat them this weekend. In fact, blag that there's shitloads of fights on this weekend. But just say, do you know something? I'm giving up my time for you this week. I'm taking you out. Come on, we'll go out for a bit of date night. Go and enjoy yourself. Let's have a bit of a cuddle. Because next week you ain't going fucking nowhere, all right? December the 4th is going to be lit up. Obviously, in the boxing world, you've got the rematch between Arthur and Yard. That should be a nice little tasty number for everybody to get excited about. And in the UFC world, Rob Font takes on Jose Aldo. What a fight that is. And we will give you a full preview on it next week. So, without any further ado, thank you very much for listening to us. Subscribe via iTunes or via our website, fightdisciples.com. We're all over social media, and get on that YouTube channel, because I'll do my best to get hold of Mo and see if we can get him on YouTube at some point this week for you, so you can hear from the horse's mouth about his excitement about now being a UFC fighter and what he plans to do to every single person in multiple weight divisions, no doubt, over the next few over the next few years. All right, so there you go. Thank you very much for listening. We'll catch you next time.
Thank you for listening. If you like what you heard, subscribe via iTunes.